Hello there, this is Krista. Hello, good evening everyone. This is Krista calling in. Sorry I'm not there in person. Can you hear me?
Yes. Can you hear us?
Can you hear us, Krista?
Yes, okay. I can hear you. Hello, Dr. Spark. Yeah, I have someone here at home that just got out of surgery, so I wasn't able to make it, but my Teams isn't working, but I'm calling in. So here we are. I have all the documents in front of me.
All right, so we're just doing roll call, and we just had a little technical restart, so your timing was perfect.
Okay. Commissioner Jose Munoz?
Here.
Thank you. And Commissioner Lisa Vega? And Vice Chair Krista Romero-Fragina?
Present.
And Chair Ronson?
Present. Thank you. Before we start, I'd like to introduce Jasmine. Would you introduce
Well? We have with us Desiree Aranda. She is the city's historic preservation officer, very recently, and we've been working with her on several of our projects. So she's here today for, in particular, item 6 on the agenda.
Thank you. Thank you for joining. We're all lay people here, so we always welcome anybody with some expertise. Thank you. Okay. Second item is a call to the audience, and this is a time where any member of the public can address the commission. We welcome your comments, your input. However, we have a limited amount of time. We usually try to keep it to about 15 minutes or so. So if you can keep your remarks to about 3 minutes, we would appreciate that. We can't address directly your questions or issues, but if there's something of impact that you bring up to us, we can put it on the agenda for the next meeting. So I hope you'll understand that. And so we have three members of the public that have submitted to ask to address us, and I'm going to do it in reverse alphabetical order since I'm a spark and I'm always at the end of the choice. So, Mr. Jim Sims.
Hi, Jim Sims. I represent the Pima Golf League in Tucson, and I'm going to address the issue of the Bell-Urich David Bell walkway, which is on your agenda. We are in total opposition to this plan. And we're hoping that the board, which I think you're going to vote for today, votes against it. Proposition 407 was approved in 2018. The plan, if we understand it, is to take $2 million and move it over. That's $5 million that was scheduled for the irrigation on Randolph North. Take $2 million of that and go over and change Bell-Urich along with David Bell walkway. Makes no sense to us. The David Bell walkway has already been recoded completely around the Randolph Compton. There's been a curb installed between the fencing and the walkway. We've addressed Mr. Jackson about this numerous times, and we're in opposition to it. You're going to change up the signature hole of Bell-Urich, which is hole number 3. The plan we saw in a meeting in here was to move everything around, basically on that south side of the dock. As Corps of Engineers been contacted. We've asked that question a couple of times. We've got no response from them. If they've been contacted, how much cost is that associated? We were advised numerous times that it was going to take Corps of Engineers 18 months to 2 years to approve any changes. That whole complex was changed many years ago to prevent flooding from downtown Tucson.
Could you sort of summarize your
So you want me to shut up? Is that what
you want? No, you have a 3 minute, 45 seconds left.
Vote against it. That's what we're saying.
Thank you.
I'm a taxpayer in Tucson, and I do not want to do this. We don't want to do this. Makes no sense.
Thank you. Okay, next I have Mr. John Haas.
Yes, thank you. I'm John Haas. I have to stand up. I apologize. When I talk, I have to stand. Proposition 407 that gave all the money for the parks and everything has $5 million specifically in that plan to do irrigation on Randolph North and some stuff on El Rio. Nothing on Del Uri. And the voters, and that was cobbled together to try to get enough voters so the people that wanted irrigation on Randolph North would vote for this. And it passed. Now, on February 1st at the public meeting in the park, please don't call a meeting at a park a meeting because it doesn't have an agenda. It doesn't have minutes. It doesn't qualify for a meeting, for a public meeting under public record laws. But the city called it a meeting, and Mr. Grant Jackson told me there's a $3.5 million budget that, and he had just gotten approval for it. So my question to this organization is, how can he just get approval for it if it's never been on this committee's agenda to approve? Was it a side hall deal? Is it behind closed doors? Is that $5 million that's sitting to be spent on Randolph North? And by the way, the time to spend that money has passed. It was never spent. There was a public information request, and the answer back was no money has been spent on that project. Well, just a few months ago, the voters of Tucson got to decide whether or not we were going to raise our sales taxes for some very specific projects with very specific items that were identified, with money set aside for it, the cobble together votes to pass, and the voters of this community, of which I'm one, thought, are there backdoor deals? Is this done behind closed doors? Do we really have a transparent process? Will that money really be spent where the voters said it should be spent? Is that money that's sitting inside in Randolph, what's that called? That money that's not spent, what is it called?
Wrap it up, Mr. Haas.
I think I'm not over 3 minutes, am I?
Yeah, 28 seconds.
Thank you. If this is voted on, then the voters who said that the city isn't transparent and can't be trusted with its taxpayer money, might be right, and that might be why 70% of the voters said no, thank you.
Thank you. Damien Klinko.
Good evening, board. My name is Damien Klinko. I serve as the executive director of the Tucson Historic Preservation Foundation, and we've submitted some communications to your commission, raising concerns about the demolition of the Santa Rita Park bathhouse. It's a historic structure. Only after the plans were published showing the bathhouse erasure did we begin to ask questions, and only then did we learn that the Tucson Pima County Historical Commission had not been consulted. There was no public process around this resource, no meaningful exploration of alternatives, no feasibility study, no effort to consider adaptive reuse, despite the project being funded by Proposition 407 that promised to protect and enhance Tucson's historic and cultural resources. The 1930s bathhouse is one of the oldest surviving public recreation structures in the city of Tucson. It was built in a Spanish Revival style. It shares architectural lineage with Hemel Park's bathhouse, which has been celebrated and maintained. The building was constructed specifically to serve South Tucson and the South Park neighborhood, historically Mexican-American and African-American communities that lacked access to other resources throughout the city. The consultant's report that was commissioned only after we raised concerns, used to justify demolition, dismisses cultural history entirely. It offers no real engagement with the site's social importance and simply concludes that similar facilities exist without identifying which and if any still remain. This is not preservation. This is erasure of our architecture, erasure of our memory, and honestly, it's erasure of trust, especially for communities that have historically been overlooked and underserved. The building can and should be adapted and can serve a new purpose while honoring the past. It can be a resource, not rubble. We urge the commission to pause the demolition and place this into recommendations, looking for adaptive reuse and finding ways to honor this little building and the history that this park presents to our community.
Thank you very much. Is there anybody else to want to speak to call the audience? Okay, we'll close the hearing. Thank you, speakers. Our next item is approval of April 21st, 2025 meeting minutes. We had a Frank Flesch in the flesh here, and we corrected the minutes. So it was actually Mr. Coleman that was here. So I made that adjustment. Save you the labor of doing that. Anybody else have comments on the minutes? Just like a comment, they're really excellent. We all go to lots of meetings and you read through this and you really understand what happened. Compliments. Yeah. Welcome a motion to
I would like to make a motion we accept the minutes from our last meeting.
Second.
Thank you. Okay. I'll just do I don't think we need a roll call. I'll do voicemail. Voice affirm. All those affirm.
Aye.
Opposed. Thank you. Okay. All right. We have an action item here. El Yurick and David Bell bike path. I thought that was also was that Cy Shore? Is that included or not?
It's different, but I'm going to talk about it when we get in the presentation.
Oh, okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I sent out a memo, or the memo should have gone out with the recommendation in the packet. I'm going to go through a quick PowerPoint because there's a lot of moving parts to this one, so I thought it might be helpful to just kind of walk through it. So let me see if we can make this work. Yeah. So, a little background on making changes to bond projects. As most of you probably remember, but there might be a few new members, this board actually approved the process to make changes. You know, we anticipated there might be potential projects that need to be changed. The ones that we expected were technical constraints that we really couldn't do a project, so we might need to make a change. The other thing that came up is we thought maybe between staff input and community input, a change might better benefit the community. So that was kind of the two thought processes we thought might specify why you would change a project that was originally in a bond package. And then if we do make a change, those changes have to be accomplished within the budget. So we can't make a change and then exceed the budget. That wouldn't work. So those were kind of the parameters when we first got into this back in 2020. Going through the Randolph Golf Course Complex, the process we went through started back in May of 2022. Some of you may remember, I know Lara clearly remembers, when the zoo project was ready to roll out and there was community pushback on the zoo project and we put it on pause, went through a significant community engagement process to reorient where the zoo would be. And through that process, you know, a lot of input came out that we really need to think about it. What does Reed Park look like? Not just now. What's Reed Park look like 50 years from now? So we went through the Reed Park reimagined process. That made sure that we showed in the future master plan where the zoo would go, but also helped us think about where does the splash pad go? What other type of improvements should we make as Reed Park gets adapted over the next 20, 30, 40, 50 years? During that process, we actually heard a lot of input about, you know, we're looking at Reed Park, but we're not looking at the green space right next to Reed Park, being the golf course and the walking path around it. That wasn't in the scope, so we intentionally didn't focus on that area. But when we took our recommendations or the information from Reed Park Reimagined to Mayor and Council in December of 2022, they specifically asked us then do a Randolph Reimagined process. So take a look at the golf courses, take a look at the path around it, and kind of take this long-term look to are there opportunities to create green space around the golf course. So we kicked off Randolph Reimagined after Mayor and Council it was in May of, or December of 2022. We kicked it off with an RFQ process. We kicked off an RFQ process where we have to hire a golf course architect and a golf course contractor. We were looking for a team to really do what we call a construction manager risk process. So they could help us come up with designs, help us cost those designs, so that we could really understand what the cost for potential changes would be. Actually, I'm getting one slide ahead. During the Randolph Reimagined, we took three options to Mayor and Council. After we went through the Reimagined process, we went to Mayor and Council and said, hey, there's three things we can look at. Del Yerrick and 22nd Street improvements. We could look at Randolph North improvements and clubhouse improvements. And from that discussion with Mayor and Council in December of 2023, they told us to move forward with what we called phase one, which is Del Yerrick and 22nd Street improvements. So Mayor and Council gave us direction to proceed with these improvements in this phase. That's when we went out to this slide, the RFQ for a construction manager at risk. We did the RFQ in April of 2024. In August, we signed a contract. We contracted with Doonick Golf. They're a golf course construction company. They then included a team that included Kevin Norby, who's a golf course architect, Ken Cavanaugh, who's a golf course architect, actually the architect that designed Del Yerrick as it is today, McGann & Associates, a local landscape architect firm, and GLHN, a local engineering firm. So this then became the team that would help us come up with designs, come up with opportunities of how to redo Del Yerrick and 22nd Street. We hired them in August. In September, we kicked off a community engagement process. That was in September. That included stakeholder meetings. Stakeholders included every neighborhood association that lived within 1 mile of Reed Park and the golf courses. So if you take all of the neighborhoods surrounding these parks and golf courses, they were invited into a stakeholder meeting. The Greens Committee was a stakeholder. There's another mayor and council committee like this, Bond Oversight Commission. They're focused on golf course impacts. So the Greens Committee was a stakeholder. We invited other recreational groups like the Audubon Society, disc golfers, walking clubs, biking clubs. And we also invited specific groups from the Randolph North golf clubs. So I got a list of there's like 60 golf clubs that use Randolph North, like Mr. Sims groups. We invited 15 or 20 of them as stakeholders to come in, come to the table and understand what we were talking through. So we held those stakeholder meetings. Then we held an open house meeting right over here at the TR building. Had, I would say, probably 100, 110 people in there. It was really about gathering impact on what people were trying to accomplish if we were going to make changes. We took that information from the September meetings. We came back in January of 2025 and did a second round of community engagement. The one kind of unique thing we did in this process, because we know it's in a little bit more detail, we actually recorded the golf course architect, like on a Teams meeting. We really had him go through, talking through what the changes would be to the golf course, and recorded that so we could post that recording on the website and direct people there before we get to the open house piece. So we were trying to make it easier for people to understand kind of what the changes were that we were proposing. We also did the same thing with the path improvements. We had the landscape architect from McGann. Did a recording. He talked through the presentation, talked through the changes so that people could kind of view it before they came to the open house. Along with those recordings, we started an online survey. I think we ended up with almost 350 people responding to the survey. That went beyond the open house, which is on February 1st. I think it closed about February 15th. We then held a second round of stakeholder meetings. Same stakeholders we met with in September, we invited back in January, and then went through kind of the preliminary concept that we had developed based on the feedback from those September community engagement process. And then we did the open house over at Reed Park, had a lot of good feedback from there. There's a number of responses we have to the survey. We had 367 responses to the survey. 46.6% responded that they like or strongly like the concept, and 29.4% responded that they dislike or strongly dislike the concept. I'm going to walk you through briefly kind of what the changes are that the consultant has come up with to orient you. This is, and my mouse is moving really funky up there. The bottom of the screen would be 22nd Street. The left-hand side would be Randolph Road. And the right side would be Alvernon. Okay? So, hopefully this mouse works. Whole, something comes up the screen, computer, and people online can see it.
We should try and follow me.
Hole 3 right now starts where my mouse is on the right-hand side. The old T-box is about where my mouse is at, or the current T-box, excuse me. And the current green is on the far left-hand side. Right about there. So what the idea is, we're really focused on trying to make the walking experience along 22nd Street better, walking and biking for that matter. Right now, if you're walking on that, cars are just flying by. It's hard to even talk to anybody you're with. So trying to improve that walking experience along 22nd Street. In order to do that, what we're trying to do is move the walking path and the biking path further north towards the golf course, away from the street, and give us a place to put in a landscape buffer between the two. In order to do that, the plan would be to shrink hole number 3 from what we call a par 5 to a par 4. Okay, so that reduces the amount of strokes it takes to play that hole. Because golf courses are rated based on how many strokes it takes to play it, we need to create a new par 5. So elsewhere on hole 14, up here, this used to be a par 4, which we are now making a par 5. So the green currently is right in through here. And the proposal is to move that green back further to make this hole longer to make it a par 5. And then in order to do that, we would need to reorient these 3 tee boxes back here, which are for hole 18. I won't call it a line green, but kind of these green patches around 14 and around number 3 down here. This shows you the amount of space that would actually have any type of impact or grading on the golf course. This is important. As you heard earlier, this is a flood retention area that the Army Corps of Engineers helped pay for many years ago, so they will need to review our plans. The goal is to minimize the amount of grading that we are doing in that flood retention area. So we are now what we call 60% design. Our consultants can now start to model what happens when a 100-year flood plain or 100-year rain hits. We can actually start to model based upon what we're showing here as the grading plan. We can model what will happen with a flood. So we will have to take that model to the Army Corps of Engineers and say, hey, here's what the model used to say based upon the current design. Here's the changes we're proposing, and here's what the impact will be from the amount of water that it'll retain. Based upon design, we don't anticipate this being a long drawn out process because we are really doing very minimal grading within the retention areas. In essence, what we're doing is shrinking this hole number 3 and moving some of the material from this area over here and raising the area on the east side. So not doing a lot of grading within the flood control area.
What would be the timeline with the Corps of Engineers to have a feel for that?
We don't know for sure. There's what they call a long review process and a short review process. A long review process, if you're making significant changes, we will have to work through Pima County on this because they're actually the holder of Pima County Flood Control is actually the holder of the permit, so we will work through them to work the Army Corps of Engineers. Initial instincts is we think it'll be a quick review because it's not a significant grading change. How long that can take is a wild guess. We really don't have any idea. I'm going to go to the path improvements on a different slide, but any questions as far as what we're kind of proposing to do on the golf course?
I just wanted to note that some of the early planning suggested a walking path through the middle of the golf courses. That's been off the table for some time.
Yeah, what we're looking at now is strictly deluric. There's no funding right now for any other walking paths through the golf course or anything like that. So that's just going away unless funding at some point comes up. If funding were to come up, then we would have to go back and have that discussion again. But at this point, there's no funding for it, so no reason to discuss it.
I assume that the funding level is pretty close to what we have projected.
We're going to get to the funding here in a second.
Sure.
Greg, can I just ask, what did the Greens Committee vote on this?
The Greens Committee, we have been reviewing these plans with them on a regular basis. They've reviewed, they were part of the stakeholder. We reviewed the plans at 30% with them. We were actually supposed to meet with them last week, but they didn't have a quorum. But I did email this memo out to the Greens Committee so they were aware of the recommendation. And so far, no opposition from them as far as the recommendation. So they're aware of what the recommendation is. Krista, did you have a question on the golf side? I'm going to go to a slide on the walking path, which is a little more detail in a second. Anything else on the golf piece?
You say, but you made sure that everybody was aware of it, right?
Yeah, this in essence is, other than having more detail, this is in essence the same information that we took to the community back in January, February. This was the concept we shared with the community back in January, February. This is the map that was on the website asking people what you like, whether you like the concept or not. So they're not, the only thing we've done is gone into more detail for design. So looking at the walking path, you know, this screen share is showing up in the middle of my screen. So this is a little more difficult. One of the key points with the plan was creating more green space down here. So by shortening the hole gives us the ability to create about an acre of parkland in this space here. Why this area was chosen was for a couple reasons. In speaking with the Audubon Society and a lot of birders, because you have a water source above here in this pond for the golf course, and there's also another pond on the right-hand side there, this is a really popular place for birders. The concept includes putting a deck out over the pond towards the golf course so that birds could actually get out on the deck, out over the water a little bit. The plan calls for bird blinds in there. It calls for some water harvesting. I think we're looking at like approximately 130 trees between this corridor on the right-hand side and along 22nd Street. And then the other pocket where we create a little bit more green space is on the left-hand side at Randolph and 22nd Street. So these blow-ups at the bottom kind of give you a feel for, you know, what these park spaces could look like going forward. The path gets pushed in some cases it's getting pushed in 20, 30 feet. In other places, as we get closer to Randolph Way, it's back to more like 10 or 15 feet, primarily because of proximity to the golf course, safety corridors, and power lines. There's some limitations on how far we could push them back as we get further west. Any questions on that slide? So as I mentioned, we actually have a designer on board. We have a contractor who builds golf courses on board. So they're giving us cost estimates at 30% design and 60% design. That helps us to make sure we're refining and staying within budget. The cost estimates, which we just got last week at the 60% design, showed that the golf course improvements come in about $1.8 million. And the trail improvements and landscaping comes in at about $1.1 million. That includes $175,000 for lighting. We originally were not anticipating putting lighting in there, but some of the feedback we heard, especially during the community engagement, was, you know, this is a popular pass. You have a lot of moms out there, and if we're going to start moving it in with vegetation, lighting is probably the right thing to do. So we have looked at and it started including lighting in the budget. At the 30% design, we were at 8% contingency. The contractor has brought that down now to a 5% contingency, so that comes in about $140,000. So the total construction for the two is about $3.1 million. How we would anticipate funding for this is The bond included $5 million for irrigation improvements at Randolph Golf Complex. That was broken down into $2.5 million for Randolph North and $2.5 million for Del Yurick. The $2.5 million for Randolph North is still being set aside. The plan is still to do the Randolph North. I'm going to touch on that the next slide. What I'm recommending change is the $2.5 million for Del Yurick. I'm suggesting we change to this project, and that would bring, that would come in at about $1.98 million. David Bell had $967,000 in Prop 407. He did get state ARPA funds to redo that path, and we've already redone that path. We actually did the David Bell path around the golf courses. We did the SciShore path, which is around Reed Park here specifically, and we actually did the Arroyo Chico section that was already done. So we actually did all three of those with the ARPA funding back in March or April. So those projects have already been completed. The path looks great. So my recommendation is we're still using this $967,000 for David Bell bike path. We're just focusing it more on landscaping and changing its current location. And then we would be looking to storm the shade. We are looking at putting in some GSI basins, pulling the water off 22nd Street to help irrigate some of that vegetation. So we're going to go to storm the shade and look at them contributing about $150,000, which brings our total funding to $2.1 million. So going back to the two choices that the Bond Oversight Commission kind of laid out for reasons we might change, I think this one falls into the category of, you know, through community input, we think a change might benefit more of the community. I think the changes to the walking path are going to significantly benefit a lot of people around the golf course that are using that path. I mean, we've done measures, and this path gets 3,000, 4,000, 5,000 people a month. It gets used a lot. So I think that's the category it falls into. I know deferred maintenance is a little bit of a challenge. I don't believe we are at a deferred maintenance issue with the irrigation system in Del Yurick. It is the newer of the two. It was put in 1995. It's 30 years old. The life expectancy for an irrigation system is 35 to 40 years for sure. Randolph North was put in 1985. It's 40 years old right now, and it's nearing its end of life. Hence, we are not recommending touching that fund. We will need to replace Randolph North at some point, and that funding is still there. So we can do this project within budget. Happy to answer any questions you might have.
I'm delighted that you put in lighting because so many people recreate after work and to have a safe environment to use that path. That's really a real plus. Thank you for engineering that in.
Yep.
Do I have the opportunity to ask a question?
No, I'm sorry.
You made a really good case for reallocating the irrigation money for Del Yurick to this project.
Yep.
So you've given us an upside to that with the logic that it's 30 years old, so it can go another 10 years probably. So I have two questions. Is there a downside to that? And do we have an idea of where the money would come from in 10 years for that irrigation to be replaced then?
Yep, you know, that's a great, absolutely fair question. Irrigation systems are by far the biggest improvement that golf courses need to continue functioning. I can't tell you right now where that funding would come from. I would anticipate either a future bond referendum, a future general fund project. You know, we are working through a new process for the city, develop a CIP, a capital improvement program for the city. So this will fall into that CIP, you know, model of things that need to be funding. Could it come from future golf funds if we start making enough money that golf could make those improvements? So I don't have the answer right away. Don't have that right now. That is absolutely a downfall to it. It's going to take us some time in the next 10 years to identify that funding. It's a challenge like that for Fred Inc. It was put in 1983. It's the oldest irrigation system that we have in the golf course portfolio right now, And we'll be looking at how we can fund that thing in the next 10 years as well. So we have several of them that would be in that category.
Was the $2.5 million for Delbrick Irrigation put into the bond because you foresaw that it would take a while to get through this whole bond process and maybe 10 years down the line that would need to be done?
Kendall, I can't tell you. I can tell you when I was overseeing golf when it happened, but I wasn't in parks, so I wasn't involved in the list of projects that were put into the bond. They asked me what golf projects you would put in, and I said Randolph North and Fred Inc. Would have been my recommendation because those were the two that were the oldest and needed it. And Randolph North and Del Yurick went in. So I don't know why it went in that way. It would not have been what my recommendation would have been at the time. It would have been the two oldest ones. And it is what it is.
Other questions? Yes.
Are there any cost savings you could find in other projects so that you could plan to allocate some of the money to irrigation? Because my concern is if you go back to voters and they say, well, we already voted on this and then you didn't do it, or you changed it, even if you went through a public process, then why should we vote again? So maybe a non-voter source of funding that you can identify, sooner. And then what if the Greens committee votes no? Do you go to the mayor and council with two recommendations? Like if we vote yes and they vote
so no? I think two things. Going back to this started in 2022, this really came as the direction of mayor and council. When we went to them with kind of the feedback that came out of Randolph Reimagined, we said, hey, there's kind of three things that came out as opportunities. One of them is this Del Yurick 22nd Street concept. The other is redoing Randolph North with the Central Path. And then the third was the clubhouse. They basically said, hey, go do Randolph. So they have already given direction to move forward with this. Sure. We have continued to meet with them at 3%, 6%, and keep them abreast of where we're at in this process. And so far, the mayor and council have been very supportive. But I think the walking experience along 22nd Street, they have heard loud and clear, is not very good.
Mm-hmm.
And that's been kind of the focus, that let's see if we can do a good job with this to do what's better for the community. Do I think long-term there's other ways to fund the irrigation? Absolutely. There is potential we could still get free water in Randolph North from a PFAS plant, and if that comes into fruition, that can help us reduce expenses. When we do eventually redo Randolph North, we would certainly reduce turf, try to reduce some of our operating costs, how much we have to maintain, mow, fertilize. So in all these things, we're looking at trying to save dollars that we could eventually plug back into the golf fund. It is an enterprise account, so if at some point we are generating excess revenue, we can bank that revenue for future improvements.
That was a question of mine. Would the irrigation for Del Yurick, irrigation updates for Del Yurick, be more efficient so that you would be spending less money for water in the future and that would be a savings? And if so, maybe that would be better done in 10 years from now when the technology is better.
The changes that we're making on, or suggesting to make on Del Yurick, there's going to be some less turf areas, probably not significant in the whole scheme of things. We would definitely be going to some desert landscaping. And I'll get my mouse to work. This area there, that's going to be much more of a desert landscaping, but it's not a, when you look at the whole golf course, it's not a big reduction. When we get to doing Randolph North, that's when we will really look at trying to reduce the amount of turf that we need to irrigate, and it'll be a much more efficient system.
John?
Great. We heard earlier this evening that the hole in question is, I don't understand the game of golf, but I think the term was a signature hole, and I'm wondering if there was any attempt to, I don't really know what that means. Was there an attempt to recreate a signature hole, say, and the revisions to that northern green?
I'm not sure what makes it a signature hole. It's that's just someone's opinion. So signature hole.
Okay.
We definitely included the golf course architect while we were getting into initial plannings, which is Ken Kavanaugh. So he had a lot of feedback on suggestions on, if you're going to shorten this hole, where do you need to lengthen it? the big thing is trying to keep it a par 71. And if we would have shrunk that par 5 to a par 4 and become a par 70, and from a golf course standpoint, you really want to keep it at 71. Hence why we looked at lengthening 14 to keep that par 71 in play. And actually trying to lengthen the golf course.
Okay. The chair will welcome a motion on the presentation to make a change.
I move to move to approve the suggested changes.
Thank you. Second. Discussion on the motion. Hearing none, we'll have a roll call.
Okay. Commissioner John Anderson.
Approve.
Commissioner Willie Blake.
I approve.
Commissioner Harold Coleman. Commissioner Nicole White.
Approve.
Commissioner Kathy Krishnan.
Approve.
Mr. Kendall Croson?
Approved.
Commissioner Jose Munoz?
I approve.
Thank you. Commissioner Lisa Vega? And Vice Chair Krista Romero-Cardina?
She said approved.
She's
accident.
Thank you.
Chair Rinsford?
Yes.
Motion passed.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Very good presentation. Okay. Our next item on the agenda is one of my favorites.
I know it.
I'm bringing this back. It's like the return of the son of Lassie.
Yeah, so Dr. Spark, did you have a specific question in mind or update?
Yes,
provide a general update on status and science.
The two things is, are we making progress with the county signage? And number two, there is a bicycle map that I see that's put out. It's showing the particularly the Tucson bikeways. But I just want to make sure that we have those interfaces with the loop, that there is signage.
Yes, thank you. So on the first question, we're making great progress, and all of those signs have been installed.
Wow.
So the county has designed, manufactured, installed all of those signs on the existing bike boulevards.
Wow.
So it took us a while, but we got there.
That's great.
And the even better news, too, is we have a working relationship and know all of the folks at the county sign shop now. And so we're able to reach out to them as we construct new bike boulevards. We know who to talk to, and we can, you know, get that process integrated into all of our future projects.
That's sensational. I'm glad I lived long enough to hear
that. We appreciate your patience. And on the second item, are you referring to the Pima Association of Governments bike map?
Yes, the bike map. Yes. The last version I saw was about 2 years old or 3 years old.
Okay, so there's a new version. And I believe it was fall of last year when those were updated and printed. And they have all of the bike boulevards that we've completed are reflected on that map, including all the connections to the loop.
That's great. Good work. Good. Thank you. Okay, we will to Santa Rita Bathhouse. Jasmine?
Share my screen. I'll start off presenting, and then I'll hand things over to Desiree. So Santa Rita Park, just wanted to give kind of an overview of the process that we have gone through to come to this point today. We started off with a master planning process. This kicked off in January of 2021. We held three virtual meetings in January, June, and June of 2021, and then in April of 2022. We also held three in-person meetings that were at Santa Rita Park. So two of those happened in November of 2021, and one of them happened in April of 2022. We did circulate two online surveys related to the master plan, asking folks kind of what amenities they would prioritize for the park as the first round, and then the second round was a comparison between two different concepts for the master plan that we asked the public to weigh in on. We had 239 respondents on the June 2021 survey, and then 375 respondents on the November 2021 survey. This is an adopted, mayor and council adopted master plan that went to mayor and council on August 9th of 2022.
I live somewhere near there, but I live on Chino in that area right there. Mm-hmm. So you didn't get too much turnout in person at those meetings?
I don't have counts, actually. We didn't have a sign-in sheet for the in-person meetings. I think I was in attendance at, I believe, one of the November 2021 meetings, and there were probably 40 to 50 folks in person at that meeting.
Okay, because I've not heard so many complaints. I was wondering, if you're going to complain, you should show up. You know what I mean?
I will. I mean, I know I was at least two, and I remember them being pretty robustly attended. Mm-hmm. And one of my favorite stories from it is one of the attendees, she was pregnant at the thing, and her child was present for the groundbreaking in a little Farsi. And I just thought that was the coolest thing, just because she literally advocated, and now she was going to see a benefit in her kid.
Okay.
So
I found the buttons to advance.
This is a rendering of the approved master plan from Mayor and Council. The primary goals that we heard during the outreach process was public safety and night lighting, a playground with shade, a dog park, retaining and improving existing softball and baseball fields, walking paths, water harvesting with native and drought-tolerant plants, splash pad and expanded skate park, shade structures, community garden, and increased turf areas for free play. So this is what went through the master plan approval process, which included presentation to the Tucson Parks and Recreation Commission, as well as Mayor and Council. Then we moved into preparation of construction documents, and that started in early 2023. We then had a survey that was around prioritization of those amenities that I just listed out, because we did not have enough bond funding to accomplish the whole master plan. So that I will cover in another slide, what's actually in the construction plans, but we went to construction documents in early 2023 and conducted a playground preference survey later that year, had 154 respondents on that one. We also got mayor and council approval for closing Third Avenue between 22nd and 21st to be part of the project. That happened August 8th of 2023. And then we finished the design process in 2024, so we have fully printed plans by that point, and went out to bid in January. We opened bids in March of 2025, and we awarded that contract in April of this year. We then received the notice from Tucson Historic Preservation Foundation and did not move forward on demolition of that pool house pending additional historic review and also cultural review that requested. And before I turn things over to Desiree, I just wanted to share, here's the scope of work for the construction that is happening currently. We've got restroom, playground, splash pad, the creation of this central kind of entry plaza that takes advantage of the closure of Third between 21st and 22nd. And then a walking path that has a decomposed granite and asphalt section to it. And then this parking lot creation down on the southern end of the park.
Desiree, can you talk us through the historic review process?
Yes. So I think the kind of reason that this was put on the agenda was to talk about the potential significance of the bathhouse and the pool. So just to kind of recap the sequence of events. So in April of this year, the Tucson Historic Preservation Foundation reached out to my office regarding the proposed demolition, asking if our Tucson Pima County Historic Preservation Commission, the review body for that is called PRS, or Plans Review Subcommittee. So asking if our Plans Review Subcommittee had reviewed the project and proposed demolition, and it hadn't. And so a bit of background, the park itself is not designated as historic on the National Register of Historic Places or locally. So it does not currently have any type of historic designation or protection on it. However, our city administrative directive called the Protection of Archaeological and Historical Resources and City Projects does have a clause in it that the potential significance of any historical resources existing on a proposed project site will be assessed. So that includes both archaeological and any type of above ground, you know, potential historic resources. And so that's where I think there, you know, may have been some overlook, probably from our department or the Historic Preservation Office. Previously, you know, during the earlier when our department would have reviewed those plans. And so noting that, you know, there hadn't been that type of evaluation done, we did kind of, you know, we did reach out to park staff who agreed that, okay, they'll stop the demolition, planned demolition, and we will take the time to evaluate the property. So, and also take the proposed project to our plans review subcommittee, and then our commission also has a historic landscape subcommittee. So park staff did present the project to our historic landscape subcommittee on May 1st, and then our plans review subcommittee on May 8th. Both committees provided feedback on the project and supported the evaluation of the bathhouse and pool for eligibility on the National Register of Historic Places. City contracted with a consulting firm to produce that evaluation or to conduct that evaluation and research, and we received a report on June 2nd, and finding the property ineligible. We did, you know, publish that document. We got additional comments back, kind of pointing at the need for additional research to look in potential historic or social and community significance of that, or the pool house. So we sent it back to the consultant with request to do additional research, which they did. They finalized the second draft of the report, sent it back to us, and found that it did not, the historic significance was not, did not rise to the level needed for to be eligible for listing on the National Register of Historic Places. So that was the finding, and we took it back to our plans review subcommittee on July 15th for an update. There were, you know, other aspects of the comments that our committees had that I think the department is willing to incorporate into the project, such as interpretive signage to tell the history of the park and the bathhouse and pool. I think there's also an oral history project that is underway currently in public art that, you know, is being proposed. The project, I think, still plans to, you know, follow the approved master plan. So that is the kind of gist of our summary of what brings us here today.
Questions from the commission?
I think Krista had a question.
Yes, go ahead, Krista.
Thank you, and I thank you for all the documents online that you could tell that when you're talking about the iterations from the consultant, they have really good pictures. I'm trying to figure out the exact picture of the bathhouse and what we're thinking of replacing it with, because in the document it's only referred to as bathroom. So I'm having a hard time deciphering between the, you know, the historic or said historic bathhouse. I don't know if you could show it to us. That would be really helpful.
Let me pull that up.
Yeah, I've been checking.
Mr. Chair, while you're pulling that up, is there still an active pool there at Santa Rita Park?
No.
It's been closed.
For a long time?
It's long,
okay.
Long time.
Okay.
While you're pulling it up, was there any active consideration of repurposing the structure to another use?
From the department's perspective, as we went through and got all the feedback from the community and did the different design iterations, no, that did not rise to something that we were requested to consider.
Because at one time, I believe that there was a concession stand in the building, and the building as a concessionaire because of all the people there. I don't know, would consider food services or some other services. I just was going through my mind.
I mean, you couldn't just take what historically may have occurred there years ago. It would have to be assessed. We would have to put together cost estimates for what it would take to bring it into code service. I mean, regardless, historic or not, it still would have to meet code requirements. And what would be the best use and support for the park?
Yes.
And so we don't know what that would cost or when funding would be available for something like that.
And it's really not too good to do that now. I remember they did used to do that at FAD. Now I don't think it would be a good thing. Looking at the past, it wasn't good then, and so it would be worse now.
Other comments from the commission?
Could I see the...
Mr. Chair.
Oh. Go ahead.
Kathy
Thank
first.
You. Go
could
ahead,
I see,
Kathy.
Can I see the proposed plan and where it is in the park in relationship to other design work that you've done there?
Construction plans or the
construction plan? Yeah, the layout where they closed the street there.
Yeah.
So, and where would this fall upon that plan?
The bathhouse is located.
Yes, that's what I thought. Which is a large, open, grassy field. Yeah.
Yeah, there are multi-purpose fields in this area. So there's one softball field. Follow this, and then they're laid out are some north-south oriented smaller soccer fields, and then the capability to have an east-west oriented soccer field.
Yeah.
Oh, and then Krista.
Yeah.
Was this what you were looking for?
Yeah, that's what I was looking at, but I wasn't sure if it was discussing the whole building or just that one that you're showing right now on your screen? Because the document is that. Go ahead.
Yeah, you're asking if the eligibility evaluation was completed on just the bathhouse itself or the full structure?
Yeah, that was the question.
Full structure.
Understood. And as of, I'm thinking about the gentleman that spoke for public comment, and I was just trying to piece everything together. And then I'm also remembering that right now there's some safety issues just because, I don't know how things are with the city, but a lot of individuals experiencing homelessness are there. So I didn't know if there was a security issue that came up from having these closed buildings or, but now with seeing the map and the demolition and what's being thought out, I'm starting to paint the picture a little better. So thank you for answering. That's it. Over.
Okay. Other comments from the commission?
Okay. I found the history really fascinating. So definitely some way to interpret it at the park. That was really interesting to learn.
Yeah.
This was the first pool, public pool in Tucson, and about all the segregation issues.
Yeah, I went out to the dedication, and the mayor was saying that the park was 120 years old, which is astounding, and that the city, but that was to provide for populations that were underserved at the time. I mean, in other words, we're catching up with our history, and that's important. And hopefully maybe with signage, again, my complaint about we name places, but we don't educate the public when they go out and understand what the space was named for or what existed there. Okay. I don't hear any other queries or questions, so Chair will welcome a motion.
It's just a discussion.
Yeah.
All right. Okay. I would still like to have a sense of the board feelings about losing a part of our history, essentially. Anyone want to comment?
Yeah, on the history of Santa Rita Park.
Well, we were talking about this bathhouse.
Oh, the bathhouse. Okay. I'll pass. Pass it right on to him. Okay. I throw him under the bus.
Well, I always question the loss of older buildings and the character that they lend to the community that makes Tucson, Tucson. However, I don't really think this warrants enough historic significance at this time.
Okay. I guess we're at the end of our discussion period. And thank
Dr.
you.
Dr. Spark, I can ask something. Yes. This is Krista.
Yes.
So thinking about not only the bathhouse, but also as so a similar commission member was talking about all Santa Rita Park. If right now this is not really usable to the community and it's a closed off space, I challenge the city with what we're doing in Prop 407 to, and I think that's the whole purpose of this, is to bring the community back and interconnect them with the connectivity, the parks, the bonds, the shade. And I think these decisions are very hard, but I do think that the community should be able to use this space, and the fact that it's not getting investment, it's not really getting the historic recognition, it makes me lean a little more towards, okay, how do we make this a space where we can come together again? And that's where I'm leaning towards. Thank you.
Thank you. Those are points well taken. I'll close the discussion on this item and we'll move to the next item, which is El Paso and Southwest Greenway. I have just a little side comment. My wife and I go yard sailing on Saturday. It's a part of our bonding experience. We were way out in the suburbs out east, and we rarely find anything. But I found a map of the El Paso and Southwest Railway System, which ended in Tucson in 1921. This map is over 100 years old, which I gave to the Transportation Museum down by the station. So if you're ever down that way. So we have a presentation on the... Yes.
Buster? No presentation, but I do just have a brief update on the project. I'm Dustin Arch, the Engineering Project Manager with DTM. And first, I'll just give a brief summary if for some reason you've forgotten what the El Paso Southwest Greenway project is. So this project, it goes from 6th Ave to Keno Parkway, and it's just a portion of the El Paso Southwest Greenway as a whole. So this yellow portion is currently in design. The dashed reddish-orange color is the project we're talking about today, and it's in design. This dark blue is completed, and then this purple portion is in design as well. So the portion we're talking about today runs, like I said, from Keno Parkway to 6th Avenue here and connects to the existing greenway, which is this dashed line. And if you look here, you can see this black dashed and dotted line. That is City of South Tucson right-of-way. So this project basically crosses the railroad right here and then enters City of South Tucson right-of-way to connect the existing greenway at 6th. And we in this design process, we've been kind of relying on them to be the ones to provide funding for that portion of the greenway to be constructed while we're designing that portion on City of Tucson's dime. And we were working with City of South Tucson, and they were supportive of the project, but when it came down to it, the City of South Tucson City Council wasn't satisfied with the public outreach that we had done. I think they just wanted to do their own outreach to see what their residents thought. At one point, I think Director Sam Credio actually went to one of the City of South Tucson Council meetings and gave a presentation on the project. But at some point, the process just stalled. I think there was some changes going on in the council itself, and ultimately we decided we needed to move forward with this project without that funding from them. So right now, this portion of the project is not in our plans to be constructed, but the 90% designs are ready if City of South Tucson can get that funding and desires to have it constructed. So at this point, it'll run from 2nd Avenue east to Keno Parkway. And just as an update, we're at 100% design for that. And we're just working with the railroad, which adds a bit of a timeline for the project. So we're expecting construction to hopefully start by spring of 2026. But just wanted to give an update that at this point, City of South Tucson's portion of the project won't be constructed alongside the City of Tucson's portion, but hopefully in the future it will be, because it will be a bit of a gap in the greenway. Anyone have any questions?
I have a question about the crossing the railroad tracks. What kind of configuration would that be?
So we are, well, it's hard to see there, but let me pull up a street view. Actually, I can just show you the plans, I guess.
So while Dustin's pulling that up, I'll just share too that while there is a gap in the greenway, or there will be a gap until South Tucson decides to build their portion of it if they choose to, the good news is there are on-street bike lanes and continuous sidewalk with lighting and landscaping in their portion. And actually, this is kind of interesting because, you know, we knew that City of South Tucson didn't have very many resources. And so that's part of the reason why the city of Tucson offered to do all the design work for them, so that that wouldn't be a cost they'd have to bear, and so that it would tie in cohesively to the rest of the project. So like Dustin said, those plans are sitting there. They're ready. You know, they could decide to do that later. But for now, their portion actually looks better than ours. So the City of Tucson section of 36th Street has no sidewalks, has no lighting, at least for a portion, between the railroad tracks and Keno. There's just nothing there. And so I think it's still going to be useful as a connection, and it's not like it's going to drop people up into nowhere, because there are other facilities that they can connect to. They're just not kind of the same level of comfort that we'd hoped for.
Thank you.
Hey, Colin, I have a question for you guys.
Yeah.
Colin and Devin, yeah. So what is the cost for the City of South Tucson? Or, because it sounds like you guys paid for the planning and to make sure it all ties in together. But again, with the good faith of what we are in Prop 407, you know, connectivity, you know, them being part of the community. I know it's different because they have a separate government, but however, I think it's still important to try to make it happen. So how much is the cost for them to do their section, if you can tell me?
Let me pull that up. So City of South Tucson, the latest estimate we had was a cost of $1.8 million. And
yeah,
the City of
I love that idea, but knowing City of South, that's just astronomically impossible. is there any way to maybe work with who our third party is to maybe we don't need to include everything, but if you guys need a connection, any way I could help you guys connect more with City of South Tucson. I just, this is just going to be left up in the air. There's no way the $1 million is going to come through. So what else can we do as City of Tucson and the efforts of Prop 407 to hybridize and support each other?
Well, originally, I think they were hoping to get some funding from the RTA that they were owed, and I'm not sure where that all landed since we decided to move forward without them. But that was the original hope, and other than that, I don't know where funding would come from, especially with the situation we're in with Prop 407 with the city.
Right. Over budget. And so it's way out of budget for us to be able to continue that ourselves as part of the project. Because of the jurisdiction, the cost automatically goes to the City of South Tucson. Is that correct?
Yeah, I believe so.
So I can add a little bit more. So there are some cases where we have constructed projects in other jurisdictions with City of Tucson money. That usually requires an intergovernmental agreement. The challenge with this project is we're in the hole $5 million at least. So I think it's going to be a big challenge for us to identify the funding to be able to do that when we can't. I think we need to solve our own budgetary issues within the city before we can start offering up money to other jurisdictions.
No, copy. That makes sense, Colin. Thank you.
Okay, so just tell us a little bit about this railroad crossing.
Yeah, so right now the railroad crossing that we're showing is here's the pathway on the south side. It's basically we're gonna extend the railroad concrete tracks a little bit further to the south, and then have the pathway come up so that you can cross it perpendicular to the tracks. And then on the north side, we're also adding in a pedestrian crossing, a sidewalk across the railroad. And then we're adding these medians here. And the reason we're doing that is when you touch something on the UPRR, they tend to make you want to replace the entire crossing signal and then everything that's related to it. So we wanted to do our best to avoid having to replace all of that equipment, which can run anywhere from, you know, $300,000 to $600,000. So if we had just kept the lanes as they were, the crossing arms wouldn't have extended far enough across to meet current standards. So that's why we put these medians here to push traffic over, and then those crossing arms do extend far enough to block traffic.
Thank you. That's great. Okay. Well, we didn't solve everything, but we've got at least the plans to solve everything. Thank you very much for your presentation.
Yeah,
okay. So next is Kenyon Bike Boulevard request for the change in route.
You just pull this stuff. Sorry, give me 1 second. Okay, I'm sorry to do this, 2 meetings in a row. This is the second project change request for the same project. Really try not to do that. There's a really good reason for it this time, I think, which is that during the second round of public outreach, we had not one, but two individuals approach us at the public meeting and say, hey, have you considered this other route? I think it solves several problems and it's probably worth looking at. So we went out, we looked at it, and this is a great idea. They had so many, I love it when this happens because public engagement, sometimes you don't get feedback that is very helpful. But when you do, it's just so great because, you know, this is exactly what we hope for, to have somebody say, hey, I know this neighborhood really well. I know some of the assets and the features, and I think you should do this instead of what you're proposing and have it be something that we think is a really good idea. So this did not come from staff. This came from the public. You've seen that map 100 times. This is the project that it's referencing specifically. This is the Kenyon Avenue Bicycle Boulevard. Here's a closer zoomed-in map. The blue line is showing the voter-approved route in this one specific area. So this is near Kolb and Prudence, close to the Pantano Wash. So this is the alternative route under consideration. And it's proposing, instead of using Kenyon, actually going up to Timrod Street and then Calle Arturo. It looks like it's kind of a less direct route when you see it on the map, but I think there's some really compelling reasons to consider this. Okay, so the first thing is that the original route of Kenyon, there is not a bridge. So the street doesn't continue across this wash. So we'd have to build a new bridge, which is not cheap. And so we went out there and looked at it. It's 6 to 8 feet below. So it's not something where it's going to be easy to just build a path at grade because that's not going to be compliant with current accessibility standards. It'd have to be like a weird kind of, twisty, turny kind of a path. So that's a challenge. The other issue is here. I mean, this is like an airport runway. we went out there and said, why was this the route that we put in the Bicycle Boulevard master plan? I mean, it makes sense. It connects to a school. There's a lot of width there that's available. But what we found is on a neighborhood street like this, that's all residential, you start putting striping in. It's a lot of additional stuff to maintain. And usually the people who live along the street don't like it as much. So we had, I think, 3 or 4 people tell us, we really just don't think Kenyon is a good street to put the bike boulevard on in this area between Kolb and Prudence. The third issue, this is good and bad. The good news is this YMCA and the park that we're trying to connect to is very active. The bad news is it's all pull-in parking. And so if you're a bicyclist, this is the path you would use. And so you've got a bunch of cars potentially pulling out into where the bikes are going to be. So that's not ideal. So those are some of the challenges with the original route. And here are some of the opportunities associated with this route change. So the first one is it's going to connect to Palo Verde Park. And Palo Verde Park is a 407 project that has funding. There's going to be some improvements, including these courts. So that's a good thing. And obviously the whole point of this initiative is to connect people to parks. So that's a big opportunity. The other thing is there's an existing pedestrian bridge that exists here on Timrod. I will say it's not up to our current design standards in terms of what, you know, the ideal bicycle facility would be. It's a little narrow, but for one-way traffic and at the volumes we would expect, I think it'll work just fine. I biked out there and it worked just fine for me. The other opportunity is there's an existing pedestrian hyperbeacon, or also known as a hawk, here at Kolb. And so there's an opportunity to save money by converting that to a hawk that would work for both people walking and for people biking. That's a big deal. I mean, that's a couple $100,000 in cost savings. This is the alternative street. Instead of that airport runway, we could use a street that's a lot narrower, where, you know, cars are, in theory, going slower. So we think Calle Arturo is a better street to use over Kenyon. The other thing that is present, so there's an existing hawk at the YMCA along the original route at Prudence. That works fine. That's great. We would just have to upgrade that to a bike hawk. The opportunity here, if we use Calle Toluca, we don't think that a hawk is needed at this location. We think we could do what's called a rectangular rapid flash beacon, which is about half the cost and still very effective. they're appropriate for a street that's 3 lanes, 30 miles an hour. You wouldn't put this rectangular rapid flash beacon on a street like Speedway or Broadway. Not something that's 6 lanes and 50,000 cars a day, but something like this where it's a narrower street with fewer lanes and less traffic and lower speeds. It can be very, so that's another opportunity to save some money. This is just a summary of the engagement that we did. The first round, that was where we really tried to get feedback on the route and the alignment. Nobody said anything. So we proceeded. On the second round, this was in May, that's when somebody brought this up. And so that's where we got the idea. So this is our staff recommendation. That's really, a recommendation from the public. And this is what we'd like you to consider.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
The photo where it was pointing at Cayo Arturo, could you bring that photo up again? Yeah, there. And I'm in favor of this, but I just want to point out because my daughter had practiced soccer there for years. And in the evenings, there's cars parked on either side of that. So it does make it narrow, but the cars aren't parked where they have to back out. They're parked, you know, like they would pull out and then come forward. You know, they do that kind of parking.
Right.
So just to be aware of that, that there's cars on either side of that street in the evenings a lot of times.
Okay. I would argue that can actually be a benefit.
It slows things down. I think it could be fine.
What that distance there on Cole, that's the stretch that makes me feel nervous about this rerouting. And is that are those a series of commercial businesses along there? Or are we basically wrestling with entries into, driveways and kind of conflicts there?
Good question. It is a field for the school.
Oh.
There are no driveways.
Oh,
and there are all these mature mesquite trees along the street. So there's two options. One, the less ideal option would be to widen the sidewalk to 8 feet. That's not ideal because there's enough space. It would not be ideal because then people walking and biking would be right next to the high-speed traffic on Cold.
Right.
The other option is to work with the school district and see if they would allow us to build a path onto USD property, and then we would get all the great shade from those trees, and they'd be buffered from the cars.
Yes.
Yeah, that's a conversation that we're definitely going to be exploring, and I hope that we can do that, but we do have the backup plan of just having a path next to the road.
Right.
Yeah, because that road's really busy. Yeah. It's a little scary thinking of crossing like the road anywhere. Not necessarily. It makes a difference there.
It's fast-moving traffic.
Fast-moving traffic, yeah.
Okay, Chair, welcome a motion on this change.
Absolutely.
Yes.
Thank you. Any discussion? Roll call.
Commissioner John Anderson.
Approve.
Commissioner Willie Blake.
Approve.
Commissioner Nicole Fye.
Yep.
Commissioner Kathy Christman?
Yes.
Kendall Croson?
Approve.
Commissioner Jose Munoz?
Approve.
Commissioner Lisa Vega? Vice Chair Krista Cardenas Romero Cardenas? Sorry.
All good. Approve.
Thank you. Motion passes?
Approve.
Passes. Next item is Drexel Road.
Yes. I'd like to invite Grant Kirkman to join me for this one. Who's here? You want to come up and sit at the table?
Sure.
So Brent works for HDR, and he's our consultant designer, engineer, project manager.
I go back far enough where Drexel Road actually used to cross the Santa Cruz.
We're actually working on that project, too, separately for the city.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Well, because to me, that's a natural crossing point.
Yep.
As far as populations and demographics.
The Tour de Tucson thing. That was the Tour de Tucson. That was one of the truck
people. Yeah.
That's really interesting. Interesting.
Your name again, sir?
Brent Kirkman.
Thank you for coming.
And part of the reason I wanted Brent to be here tonight is because I'm taking this project over from Fast Rearer, who made a presentation last time. Fast no longer works for the city, unfortunately. We were sad that they left us. But this project is still moving forward, and we'd like to provide an update on it. So the short version is, and I don't have a presentation. I think it's simple enough that we can talk through it. We encountered some feasibility and cost challenges when we started to scope this project with HDR. The voter materials say that this path will be on the south side of Drexel, between 12th Avenue and Country Club. The issue with that is there's some major utilities on the south side. There's some major areas where it's constrained from a right-of-way perspective. And so we challenged HDR with saying, hey, can you come up with what you think the ideal alignment for this path is? Which side of the street would make most sense? Is it the south side, or is it the north side, or is it some combination of both? They did that analysis. I think they did a great job with it. It was provided in the meeting materials, provided a recommendation. Their recommendation was specific, and it was to use the north side of the street for most of it, but it does jog down to the south side between Park and the other street. You're about to talk your head.
I should know that. it's a couple blocks.
Del
Morro Boulevard.
Okay.
And so I'm happy to answer, and Brent's here too for this purpose, is to answer any questions or concerns you have about the recommendation and the memo. However, the ask for the commission tonight is a little bit different than we normally do. Normally we say, would you approve this specific change? In this case, because we're so early in design and because there's so many little sticky issues with right-of-way and utilities that we're pretty sure about, but we're not 100% sure because we really haven't started design, what we're asking of the commission is, would you be open to allowing the consultant team and staff to proceed with designing and constructing a shared-use path on Drexel from 12th Avenue to Country Club, which is the same alignment that we, you know, included in the voter materials, but instead of constraining us to the south side of the street, would you allow us to build part of it on the north side of the street, or most of it, or even all of it on the north side, depending on how things shake out as we go through the design? And this was Brent's recommendation. He said it's going to be really tricky to know right now exactly what we should do. And so if we can have the flexibility to pursue either side of the street, that's really going to be, I think, the best outcome.
I vaguely remember the precedent was on Roger Road, where we asked the utility TEP to actually move their power pole so we could have access, put our bike path in there. So it's the same kind of thing. Maybe we can get some flexibility with the utility. Is that a...
Possibly. Yeah, and I think what happened with Roger was we came to you once and we said, hey, can we change it?
Yeah.
And then we learned some more things in design. And we came back and said, hey, can we change it again? So I think we're trying to avoid coming to you multiple times and asking.
Right.
But we are committed to keeping you in the loop and making sure that you're aware of the public engagement activities that we're doing. So we'll be back with, you know, additional updates to keep you posted on how it's going.
And it will be going back to the public.
It will be. Yes. So we did do some public engagement so far. We did two meetings. And we had, I would say, reasonable attendance. You know, it wasn't like 100 people. But I think 30 to 40 people.
The two events, yes.
Yeah.
And there was each event. Yeah, and we put a summary of those responses in the little memo that we put together in general. And then FAFSA had already, they went out separately and met with the schools as well and with Living Street Alliances. They were some of the initial push behind the south side alignment that we've called it. I think a lot has changed since that was done. That was done a long time ago, that initial work. And the public in general was very supportive of one or both of the options. If you look at just north versus south, the preference was actually north side. There's more homes on the north side, and that's where one of the schools does like a walking school bus, and they walk on the north side before they cross over to the school on the south side. So in terms of just where you would gather users and stuff, there was a preference to the north as well.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Just a little bit east on Bonnie and Drexel, so it's just like a little bit east of Country Club. I can't tell how far you can look, make a very short distance. The county just sold a property for an 80-unit affordable housing complex, and I'm wondering whether there'd be an opportunity like with South Tucson where you design like an extension but you don't build it, and then the county would have the design, because that section is in unincorporated Pima County. Like if you could just design that portion of it to connect up to the housing project.
Thank you.
Great.
Interesting.
I can email you about it separately. But
please do.
Okay. It looks really close.
Though. Yeah.
That was how far east?
Bonnie, it's the next road east of Country Cliff on the other side of the Cattle House, Steakhouse and Saloon.
Oh, the old cattle town.
Yeah, it's just on the east. It's just the next half street. And so it's on the corner
okay,
there.
Okay, I see it. Yep.
Yeah, it's just an open space right now.
Uh-huh. Great. Chris to put a question in the chat.
Oh, yes. Go in. There's a question.
If LSA was involved and they are our local bicycle and all-use transportation, would it be possible to ask them to do the planning evaluation, offset the cost for evaluation, and keep the dollar in the community?
It's a good question. So I think LSA's involvement was more grassroots and community-based than technical in nature.
Yeah.
And so we've been keeping LSA involved and making sure that the community members that they spoke with that were enthusiastic about this project are aware of these changes and understand them. And the result of that outreach has been that they are supportive and understanding. So I think HDR's work, I think they've completed the planning evaluation. And our intent is to keep them on board to work on the design. But we absolutely will keep LSA involved in the process.
Thank you.
Yes, sir. By granting them this flexibility now, do we preclude our ability to come back and vote on a final design?
No, this would be like a provisional approval of their flexibility, and they'd have to come back to us for a final change, assuming that there's a change in design.
We absolutely can do that. We can do it however the commission would like.
Okay. All right.
Yeah.
So this is a provisional approval to go ahead with the design process, noting that you're going to come back to us with the final design. Second, please. Yes,
second.
You.
Yeah.
Roll call, please.
Sorry. Yes. I'm sorry. That was very definite.
Oh, first, sure.
Second.
It's a, who did the first?
I'm not sure there was. Was that a motion you just made, Randall?
Yes, I wanted to make a motion.
Okay.
That we would accept this change of
perfect.
Like you see, it come back later if we
right.
had
for final approval.
I'll second Willie's
yeah.
motion.
Yeah.
All right. I'll second Willie's
motion. Okay, that's fine.
Right. Roll call.
Okay. Commissioner John Anderson?
Approved.
Thank you. Commissioner Willie Blake?
All right.
Commissioner Nicole Fife?
Yes.
Commissioner Kathy Christian?
Yes.
Commissioner Kendall Croson?
Aye.
Commissioner Jose Munoz? Commissioner Jose Munoz?
Sorry, I approve.
Thank you. Vice Chair Christopher Romero Cardenas?
Aye.
Chair Ron Stark?
Yes.
Okay, the motion.
Thank you. We don't have a formal item in the agenda, but I'd like to use chair prerogative to ask about the Cushing Street skate park.
So we're still navigating through the requirements that the Federal Highway and ADOT have. They did trigger an archaeological
environmental,
I was trying to remember which one it was, study, which we didn't find out about until later in the process. ADOT's been very, very helpful in terms of helping us navigate on what the Federal Highway Commission wants, FHWA. And so the permit, once we have all the other approvals related, would then be able to move forward. But we will have to resolicit for the construction company because of the time period.
We lost that contract.
Because it's only good for so many days.
Yeah.
So once we have the environmental settled, then we will resolicit.
I feel this is a public relations problem that we've had. We've promised this the public skate park, and it just I wish somehow we could get some information out to the public. So because I know there's a pretty active community that's very interested in this, and we've been, let them know.
We've been keeping those points of contact aware.
Yeah.
We've also been trying to really delicately handle the situation, because if it comes across as us being critical or negative about the discovery of additional compliance, we don't want to annoy the folks that we need the yes from, basically. So we've really tried to just, it's still happening. The funding's in place. It's just we have some more regulatory compliance to complete.
I apologize to the commissioner for going off script, but it just really bugs me.
We forgive you.
Okay, now for the highlight is the money.
Chairman Sparks, members of the commission. We can pull up if you'd like, but you do have the materials. I'll go briefly through the finances, the cash status, and then field any questions you might have. Since we met last time, the amount that we've spent in actual expenditures, roughly $6.5 million. That was over the last three-month period. You'll notice at the top of your handout that the cash balance from our last issuance, we still have about $30 million left. We anticipate that that should hold us over through mid-2026. Keeping in mind that we do have mayor and council $20 million or so dollars set aside if we do need that to bridge a gap until our next issuance. Because we did not budget for a bond issuance in fiscal year 26, we kind of have to wait until mid-26 July to go out to market anyway, and we anticipated that the fund should carry us through there.
So we may have to use the gap money?
It depends on the timing of how close we get, because when we go out for the new issuance, we have an option of identifying expenses that we are incurring as that issuance is happening and then doing a reimbursement resolution so we can go back and fund the reimbursable expenditures against the next issuance. It just depends on how much of a gap we have there. So when we get to the next meetings, we'll be a little bit closer to a solid estimate. But either way, we have multiple options, so we are fine cash-wise. We're about 7 months into our previous issuance, and we're about 40% through with that. When we go out in mid-26, we'll also be looking at the option of if we're doing two more issuances or one more. We have about $114 million left that we can issue, depending on market and spend. Then we kind of evaluate what we go out for, one or two more issuances. I think we're over the hump of delays, hopefully, so that you see this issuance that we just did is going to span about a year, and that no problem at all. We're not going to be running into holding bond money for 3 years and then running into the issues we had with the pandemic timeframe. So that might make it more to our benefit to issue one more big issuance. So the money's readily available. We're earning as much as we can on that, and then the money's out the door quickly. But we'll be evaluating that as it gets closer. All right. I think those are the main highlights of the activity since last time. If you have any questions, I'm happy to answer them for you.
And we really went past the tough point. I think we were all kind of sweating it out. Thank you very much. Questions from the commission?
Mine's more about timing. I think originally we thought it would be finished by 2028, and then there was obviously good reasons for why there were delays. Is there any kind of estimate like that maybe the projects will be fully delivered in 2029 or 2030 or –
On the park side, believe we're on schedule
for 2028. Wow. Okay.
There might be some projects that are in construction, but everything.
That's
weird. My only concern is the escalating costs of material and and labor to do these projects. And there's nothing new about it, but I think it's a reality that we're facing. And I guess when we get towards the end, I guess we'll have to cross those, some of those issues, re-engineer some projects maybe.
I would say the good news is some of our more recent bids have come in a little bit below initial estimation. So we're taking that and running with them. But yeah, we will continue to just monitor and try to anticipate what we have to do.
Going back to your, whether like phase three, we've got two big projects that require more design than any others, and those are starting design now.
Oh, that's great.
So they're in design early negotiating. They'll start design this year. So we are way ahead for those projects for phase three.
Boy, what a turnaround from when we started out. Thank you. Okay, I think we just accept your report as a thank you. Very concise and understandable.
Thank you.
Check your calendars for October the 20th. God willing, we'll all be in 2026, January the 12th. Any future agenda items that came up? I think we actually have some carryover with the Drexel. Yeah. So, commissioner announcements and staff announcements. I just would like to put into the record that the commission was able to be represented in the following dedications or openings at Fort Lowell Commissary. That was really beautiful. Freedom Park, the Splash Pond, that was the squeal. I can still hear the squeals of delight. Jacobs Park, where we actually had the son of Robert Jacob, who was there. It was really nice. And Quincy Douglas, which was really fun. It's a great turnout. And I missed Mission Manor, but we had a lot of speakers, so I think in spirit we were there. Just another comment. Three of us are appointed by the ward. There are three ward elections, and potentially there could be new ward members, and we are appointed or serve at their pleasure. This commission has had two unanticipated or unintended removals, I should say. So those, I think we should all check back to whoever appointed us to make sure we're serving their needs and desires. I think it's just my editorial. I'll welcome a motion for adjournment.
I'd like to make a motion there.
Second.
Oh, sorry, I did have an update. Sorry, everyone. Is it possible, Chair, to make an update and an announcement?
Oh, sure, please.
Excellent, thank you. So this Wednesday, some community members made me aware about an event. So this Wednesday, July 23rd, from 5 to 7 at Micah Mountain High School off Valencia Road, they're talking about the Project Blue, and I don't know how many people are aware of this, but it's looking to create a data center, a couple of them, in southern Arizona. And I know as City of Tucson, we have a lot of our own irrigation planning, and we see that this might affect irrigation, not only water, but also energy. So for anyone that's interested, or if you are, you know, are aware of people that may be interested, please let them know that there's going to be people getting together at Mika Mountain High School on 10800 East Valencia Road at 5 p.m. to discuss Project Blue and options for the community of Tucson. Thank you.
Thank you. So enjoy the monsoon. I saw a couple lizards with Bay West Life Preservers on.
Yeah. I think they were happy.
I know the cicada are happy, that's for sure. And the little ants.